Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Carvery with Alex Storr. This is the podcast where we are discovering each episode that success, happiness, innovation, collaboration, engagement, teamwork, creativity, all the things that you desire out of your team and out of your experience in your career, it's your natural state once the drama's gone. So what do we do on this podcast? We look at areas of interference that are leading to drama, and we simply carve those away to reveal that natural state through a series of tools, through pointing at some universal principles, through a variety of ways to help us make work a bit more effortless. And so I'm glad you're here for another episode. Now, obviously, I've been MIA for a while, and I want to explain why. And this was all spurred from a conversation I had after a training I did a couple weeks ago where someone came up and she was kind of shy. And sorry to call you out here, Lizzie, but she goes, first question, I only have one question. What happened to the podcast? And, you know, the podcast was growing and it was so amazing to see a fan who had listened to, I was like, oh, you listened to all 43 episodes? She's like, no, it's 46. Like she knew exactly how many episodes and she was calling me out a bit that that resource is gone for her and she was hoping for more content. And I wanted to clarify, you know, although that was a funny interaction, what's going on as far as content and what I've been really focused on to help keep you informed, but then also lead into this episode I have for you today, which I'm really excited about. And so first off, I have been pivoting more to writing and doing a bi-weekly blog that comes out on Wednesday. And so if you're hearing this and you're interested in that, I encourage you, that is kind of the starting point to all of my content. And this blog is designed to be like 2 to 3 minutes, very short, and just a quick leadership idea. And within that, I link a lot of my other content to lead you into a tool or to take that insight or that interesting idea that I was thinking of that's really short to just intrigue you. It leads you right into the part of my content on YouTube or other podcasts that would give you the deeper dive. And so it becomes this experience every other Wednesday to keep you fresh with reality-based leadership and ditching the drama at work. And so I encourage you, if you're not on that, to get on that bi-weekly newsletter that comes out on Wednesday. The link for it is info.realitybasedleadership.com/portal. And I call it the workplace portal because it's the portal to a workplace that's beyond drama. And so I'll link that in the episode notes. And I encourage you to sign yourself up and anybody else that has that twinkle in their eye when you use some of these tools or you say one of these quotes or you use some of the work that you've learned from me. If they have that twinkle in their eye, get them signed up and that becomes kind of your dream team that's working to move beyond drama and deliver results in spite of any circumstances. And so be sure that you're on that bi-weekly newsletter because that's where I'm doing more writing. Now, speaking of more writing, another reason that things have kind of, I've had to pull some levers as far as time is that I am 3 chapters into a new book. And this is like not been announced yet. So if you're a big fan of what you've seen or you've been in one of my sessions, I am writing a new book. We're 3 chapters in and it's really exciting because over the last 7 years of doing this, I've really come to know the power of the tools. And by tools, I mean the SBAR, thinking inside the box, the negative brainstorming. A lot of these tools you probably have heard from me and you can find them on my YouTube channel. Sitting in those tools with live examples where leaders bring up their toughest issues that they haven't been able to solve for like 3 years and it's like a source of most of their suffering. And in one session with those tools, we get all the ego out of there, the drama ditches, the C parts, so to speak, and we have a clear way forward. They really leave like speechless. And they're like, that one tool just cleared like 3 years of drama. And those experiences happening over and over and over, especially in the last 3 or 4 years as I've been doing this, I could not tell all of you about that and share some of those stories with the goal being, if you're not using the tools each and every day with your teams, with your own mind, with your groups, you're not doing reality-based leadership. You're not ditching the drama if the tools are not an active part of what you're doing. And so that's what this book's going to illustrate is several examples of how our essential tools of reality-based leadership are ditching the drama out there in big ways. And the hope from that is not only that lesson of if you're not using the tools, you're not doing reality-based leadership, that wake-up call, it's also to show that it's doable. It's also to show many, many ways that you can set these up and move them into your world and take some case studies from clients I've worked with and leaders I've worked with and be able to set up your own tools so you can get through your biggest problems. And so I think it's going to be a groundbreaking book. I have even Sai, our founder, like she's ready to make content around it. We're going to do a ton of just talking through these tools and bringing in her stories as well. And so stay on the lookout for that and I'll keep you updated. But that's the pivot and the apology I want to give for why there hasn't been as much podcast content. But today I had an interview that was really cool alongside an article I did about creating a culture of ownership and accountability. And it's an extensive article. It's a big, long, you know, case study. And it doesn't mean that it's long, you shouldn't read it. It means it could be a really cool like mini lesson or deep dive for your team. And I'm going to have this all linked where you can print it out, you can get this thing, and you can have a conversation around it. There'll also be this interview that goes alongside it. And so I'm putting this up on my YouTube channel if you want to watch the video with the team that at Emergence that I did the article with. Or if you want to listen to this podcast, you can send it over. And so this is all about the article that I wrote of the five ways to create a culture of ownership, the five tips through accountability. And it's got some really practical tools, some QR codes that link to, you know, videos, all that's in there. So definitely grab that download. You can print it out, you can share it, and it's absolutely free. But then this interview goes alongside that, and I talk through some deeper concepts and share some more research. And so I'm going to get this teed up for you now. Again, I want to thank you for all of your loyalty and your spreading the word out there and for you ditching the drama in these challenging times. And I thought this would be a nice treat given I've been kind of MIA for a while. So enjoy the podcast. I can't wait to hear about your takeaways. And as you take the article to hear some of the conversations you get started, always find me on Alex M. Dorr, at Alex M. Dorr on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all those places. You can send your questions and let's have a conversation around this. So thank you so much for being out there and answering the call to greatness. And I look forward to more conversations. Let's keep ditching the drama.
Welcome everybody to the Global Online Happiness at Work Summit 2022. My name is Maatje Wolf. And this year, the summit is all about the lessons learned from the past for a better future. Or to put it another way, the lessons learned to sustainable ways to build successful companies where people can thrive. And in this video, I'm talking to Alex Dorr, Vice President of Reality-Based Leadership, and his company works for big clients like CDC, Bank of America, Salesforce, John Deere, and I can tell a lot about Alex, but I think he can better introduce himself. So Alex, can I hand over to you? So please tell a little bit more about yourself, about your background, how you come to this stage of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. And I love this event. And for all of you that have joined, that we're working on, you know, happiness, evolving ourselves, supporting our teams. And that's why I'm super grateful to be here to share some ideas that might be helpful. Yeah, at Reality-Based Leadership, we do trainings and keynotes and experiences in corporations all over the world that are focused on ditching the drama in the workplace. And our research to set the stage here found that the average person is spending about 2.5 hours per day in what we call drama. And this is where people are like, think this is sick and wrong. They're working hard, but in their minds or out loud, they're like, this is sick and wrong. I would have never made this decision. Who thought of this? This is absolutely ridiculous. Resisting change, not being aligned with their organization, gossiping, tattling, venting, complaining. It's about 2.5 hours a day. So we really help leaders mainly identify the sources of that. There's only five. And you can then teach them to everyone else. And you can say, that's just some drama. I have, you know, this human condition as well. Let's call a timeout, get into a simple tool, reflect together and get back on track. And we really show that's a big competitive advantage. It brings happiness. It brings teamwork. It gives people a tool to know they can get out of a messy situation. And so all this actually leads to what we're talking about here is happiness and more results, more innovation, which is what we're all actually trying to do. And so that's what our workshops and our books do to help you do that really easily. And then what's funny about this being about happiness, I realized we actually study the opposite of happiness.
and how to get rid of it. And it's drama. And so what's left then, we're like, let's just get rid of the opposite of happiness and we'll see if happiness is what's left. I love this example, Michelangelo, when he carved the statue of David, everybody cries when they see it. It's like a masterpiece. And when they interviewed him, and you probably know more about this than I do, wherever you're at, they're like, wasn't it hard and really tough? And he goes, actually, it was effortless. I just removed everything that wasn't David and he appeared. And you guys know sculptors know that. That's their whole thing they see. Well, that's what leaders do. If you remove everything that's not happiness and results, what appears is a masterpiece. And that's what we do with our training. We remove everything that's not results, teamwork, great stuff, a drama. And when that's gone, what's left is a beautiful masterpiece in your culture, in your workplace. So how did I get into reality-based leadership? Quick story to set the stage. It happened to our founder, but you might have a similar story. I was back, my wife's from Spain. And when we go there, I love seeing her family and I always want to connect with my Spanish is not good. I'm still learning all of that. So around the table, we're having a beautiful Spanish meal from the South, if you've been there, and I want to communicate. So I'm translating, I'm conjugating, and I have a beautiful thing to say, but they are 7 paragraphs ahead of me. So I just sit there and I get sweaty and I'm like, I don't know how to say air condicionado, which is air conditioning, turn the air on. And so that's how stressed I get in that situation, even though I want to connect. So this one day, my wife and I get to go hiking back to English, which is my preferred language. And we're going up this hill. We're like in slow motion love. It's beautiful. We don't have any work to think about. And halfway up the path, all of a sudden, there's something squiggly. And I hate squiggly. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's a snake. I look to my wife and I go, Anna, are you going to suck the venom out of my leg if that bites me? Or am I? Like, what's our plan here? Do I need to grab that little twig over there, that tree branch, and wrap it around my leg because I saw on a show once that'll save my life? And then I'm thinking, oh my gosh, have we been married long enough for the universal healthcare? That seems like an awesome idea because this is $1 million in the US for me to get amputated. So, and I didn't read our insurance. I never read it. And I didn't read a history book in school. I don't even know if we're still allies with Spain. I don't know if they still like us politically. What's this doctor going to do to me when I get this amputation? I have to go to the bathroom. I can't even think. And I look at my wife. She's a little disappointed how I'm acting. And we need to go up or down. And we're way up in this mountain. And we decide we're going to try and continue forward. And we can barely move. And we're so stressed. And there's nothing coming to our mind to save ourselves. And as we get a little closer, we realize that hasn't moved for a little bit. And as we get really close, we realized it wasn't a snake at all. It was a rope off someone's little shoe bag. And so my question for you, and this is my big lesson, why reality-based leadership is so important, is what caused my stress? The rope or all of my thoughts about the rope? See, my stress wasn't from my reality. It was from the story I made up about reality. Now, I learned that that is a universal truth if you get still enough. Now, all of our teams that are stressed, all the stress at work, all the stress we all felt in the last 2 years, I ask you, how often were you turning ropes into snakes? Could it have been 2.5 hours a day? Now, I'm not saying the last 2 years weren't painful. We lost people that we loved. Some of us were really sick if you made it through. We had people lose jobs. We lost millions of dollars of business like this. That was painful. But the suffering on top of it, and all the stuff, the snake, was completely optional. And so this was a big lesson that I didn't know we were going to have a pandemic at the time, but that woke me up to there is drama out there and there are lessons that we can teach. And I found reality-based leadership and I've been speaking and teaching lessons like that for about 7 years now. And so that is what I learned, that these universal principles are not being taught at work and people are really getting into some stress that's optional. And so that's how one of the things we teach at reality-based leadership that really helps leaders help separate out the rope from the snake 100 times a day. And that saves a lot of time and creates a lot of happiness. So that's kind of what started. And so there you go.
I'm so amazed about what you can think in a few seconds when you're sizzling and then think you see a snake. That's amazing.
And it's like, you know, so your happiness is gone. So you're trying to create more happiness in the world. Let's start with questioning our stressful thoughts and get down to the facts and see if life is as stressful. Start there before we do a culture change and we do a leadership intervention and do a consultant and all of that. It's like, let's just write down everything you're thinking and believing about that work situation that's so stressful, you're almost having a heart attack. And then see, what do we know for sure? I'll never forget, I did that with someone that was mad at their boss calling all the time, and they're breathing down their neck, and their micromanager treats them like a child. And as they got down to the facts, the rope, it was, I have a boss that checked on a project. It's got to be updated by Thursday. And that was it. They were so irate. They were venting to everyone about this crazy boss. And the boss was a boss that was just checking on projects, which is what a boss is supposed to do. And so if they're just like, what do I know for sure? They stick to the facts, the rope. They're like, oh, I guess I'll just catch that project up, rearrange priorities, and then I'll continue on and be happy. So all you had to do to change everything without changing anything and be happy was question your thoughts. Look at how easy happiness returns. So it's very interesting, something to dive down. And that's what we teach leaders to start, among other things.
So, and if you look at the last past 2-3 years, what did you learn from that related to this example that you're providing?
So, that's the big thing. We're focused on the last 2 years. So what I really have been sitting with is that was unprecedentedly painful for all of us. And we all know that. And when we were supporting organizations during that, there was a time where our stuff's more calling you up to greatness, moving beyond your circumstances to evolve and be able to impact them. We focused a ton on that. When the pandemic came, this was like a trauma, right? It was, leaders needed to focus less on the call to greatness and go back to loving people up. Are you safe? Do you feel connected? Are you good? Like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then a lot of our work, it was like step three, now that you're safe, now that you're connected, we got to figure some stuff out for our clients that we can and get really basic on what we're taking care of. Don't do all the things we were doing. What are the three core things we need to focus on? Because we had so much going on, if your business was even able to still run. And most of us all got shut down, but then it was times we could still, depending on our business, work. And then after that, it's what I've learned is people need to make sure we don't waste this experience. Curate and capitalize the life you want to live, the business you want to have moving forward very intentionally. So once you got simple and finally got some stability, if you even have it yet, it's like, don't add everything back in to get busy for no reason again. Only add in what adds value to your business and your life and your team that we want to sustain moving forward. It's like, make sure you're doing some deep contemplation on what adds value and what doesn't. And then once we curate and capitalize, that's how we move forward. So what I learned to summarize it is leaders need to first love people up, and then we got to remember to call people up. And that's building relationships, reminding them we do sacred work. We support people. We serve people to have a better life, love you up. And then many leaders forgot to still call people up to greatness. It's like, we can't just surrender. We work a lot in healthcare. You can't just surrender that we are just not supported. We didn't have the resources. Given we're low on resources, given we're down two people, you know, I love you and we're here and we have people that need us. What's the next thing you can do to add value to this person's experience? Yes, that's less than ideal. You know, I love you. Given this is what we have, what can you do to still help? You're put here for a reason. So it's this balance of loving people up. We had to go back to love. And then there was still the need for the call to greatness. We had people to serve and support. And then the other thing I was thinking about is a lot of these things we talk about is it's all the leader's job to create a happy environment. And what all of our content focuses on is this idea of shared accountability. When a leader is solely responsible for someone's engagement or happiness, the employee's always chasing and the leader's always, you know, pursuing, it creates a codependent relationship that is super toxic. So what we recommend is whenever someone wants more happiness, the first question is, I love that. I would love for you to be happy here. Second question, what are you willing to do to get it? What's your part in this? And I see so many leaders, you're probably here. It's like, how can I create a happy workplace? Yeah. Go ask your people, what would you be willing to do to get it? And it's a really powerful thing because most people look at that question, they're like, stumped. I do this exercise where you put up a piece of paper, what would it happiness look like in your workplace? And people can give you a huge list. On the second sheet of paper, it's like, okay, what would you be willing to do to contribute to that? It's completely blank. That visual of what I want in the world, all success and happiness and everything, utopia, versus what they're willing to do, which is nothing, is the ultimate experience for people. I go, oh, once that second list is as long as the first list, then we'll talk about how I can support you with that step three. Most leaders say, what do you want? Happiness, tons of money. And you're like, oh, let me go do that for you. You go to the third list. So you want to create that shared accountability reflection so people know this isn't all just the leader's job. This is us together are trying to create that. So those are kind of the two things I learned. Not all leaders can't do all this. People have responsibility. And we got to, in crisis times, lean more towards love, but still don't forget the call to greatness.
Yeah. So what you say, if I understand you right, there are three questions as a leader. You can say, okay, well, what would make you have a happy what does make this a happy workplace for you?
What's a perfect culture look like to you?
Perfect.
Trust each other, open communication. We don't keep secrets. I'm like, awesome. I want that as well. Yeah.
And then you say, okay, well, what are you willing to do? And then, and of course, that's one part of the biggest eye opener, for example, is that they keep quiet. So they want a lot.
But a lot of times they're like, well, I'll wait for it when it comes, or I'll sit here and do nothing until you bring it to me. It's like, that's not how the world works. But if you tell people that, it sounds rude, but if you're curious, it's got to be visual. So I'll be in front of 100 people and I'll say, we got some drama here. First sheet, what do you want? People can make a list of 100 things they want different. Second sheet of paper, I go, perfect. I love that. That's the exact culture I want. Ironically, I want just what you want. What are you willing to do to get it? And there's nothing, 100 to 0. And they're finally like, I got it. Whoops. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So that's a fun activity to do. It's like a coaching facilitation. Takes maybe 10 minutes. It shifts the entire culture for a second. It's like an experience they can't forget. So yeah. More of those is what we have for companies.
Yeah, that's a nice one, because we see that a lot of organizations and HR departments, they try to develop, design the employee experience. But I think that in that language, you make people lean back, because you already provided almost like, okay, I will design the employee experience. But first you have to ask the question, what are you willing to put in?
To do to get it.
Yeah.
And like, so we'll design that for you. Before we go there, what are you willing to step into? So it's like, you want better training. Are you willing to attend the training? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to apply the tools? Are you willing to get messy with us? No, I'm going to go to the training and hope it works. So it's like, we need that shared commitment as a partnership to be able to move this forward. And I feel like universally, people are not catching that step. They forget to ask if those people are even willing. So, which is, you know, the article we might talk about, I wrote it, How to Create a Culture of Ownership. Well, that's one of the factors of that is important. So I didn't want to jump ahead, but it's like, you know, I'm assuming we'll get to the article, but that's just setting the stage. So.
Yeah, no, it's nice. We asked Alex to be part of a business journal, the Journal for Business Agility, and he wrote an article, as he said, about a culture of ownership. This whole issue is about reforming cultures, and I really like you, Alex, to share a few of the highlights of your article so that people might be interested.
Yeah, so I asked to write about culture of ownership, which we all want, I had to back up, because in our research, and I'll connect some places you can go to learn more about this, because it is the most important thing for everything you're doing. So you got to get back to like the right North Star. So a culture of ownership, when people say they want that, what they actually want is a culture of accountability. Now, ownership is one of four factors of accountability. So it's actually the third. Now, why is this important? We've done over 20 years of research, and we're gonna get deep here, but a high accountable is back to, in psychology, we know this, someone with an internal, it's called locus of control. You can Google it and look it up. very well validated stuff. Basically, you believe you can have impact in your circumstances. That's an internal locus of control. If you, in your mindset, have an external locus of control, you believe that everything's up to luck and it's all about brown nosing and things just happen to some people and you can't really impact things. That's two different mindsets. It's two different visions of the world. So a high accountable would be internal locus of control. There's a situation going on. I'm like, I can impact this. I might not be able to fix all of it, but I can have impact. External locus of control, there's a situation going on. It's like, oh, nothing I can do. I tried and it's just, this is just all a mess and I can't fix everything. So how can I fix anything? So that'd be a high accountable. And so when we looked at people with that internal locus of control and they were reporting that they were happy and successful, the main thing to know about accountability is it's most correlated to your success and happiness. So all of this comes together. If you want happier people, work on growing their accountability level, that they can have impact in the world. And so the what I talked about in there is you actually want to create a culture of ownership. And there's some tools to do that. So that's the key, is starting there. So I'll give you an example. So we do these surveys to see like basically how happy you are at work. We have a whole tool for this. And it's just for research now. But we were at a company and 68% of the culture did not trust senior leadership. So imagine 68% of this huge company of all the people didn't trust senior leadership. So you're like, holy blank, whatever your cuss word is, we're in trouble here. So the whole company was going to spend millions of dollars to take out all 30 of their executives, send them to a trust camp, do a ropes course and a bunch of hiking and teach them about trust and bring in a big $1 million contract speaker for trust. And we said, before you do all that, let's see what the high accountables say. Because we have a survey that indicates your accountability level based on this research. And it was fascinating. Over 95% of the high accountables did trust senior leadership. So did you have a trust problem or a level of accountability issue? Now, it was a smaller group of high accountables. So what we did instead is we said, where are the low accountables? How do we coach them out of the organization or send them to the competition? Because we don't want low accountable. It's resistance, victim mindset. And then we just only hired in high accountables and then amplified the high accountability happening. And so trust, you're trying to build a culture of trust, let's say, culture of, you know, all that. I'm like, well, who's saying they need that? The high accountables or the low accountables? The point is, if your high accountables are saying we don't have a culture of trust, you have a problem. If a lot of low accountables are saying we don't, it's not actually a big problem. So we have books on this and everything, but I just wanted to clarify that what you actually want is a culture of accountability. And then we want to create a better place for high accountables to work. That's low drama. And then they stay, they thrive. They high accountables don't like hanging out with low accountables. People that are in a victim mindset all the time, you can't even stand it. So they're not your friends. High accountables then invite other high accountables. So you win the hiring game, you win the retention game, you win all of the things that are your problem. High accountables, you have to create a place for high accountables to live, or to work, that's low drama. And that's how you win. And that's how they're happier. You know, they love to get results, which you want in your business. And they still have fun, but their fun is in getting results together, not fun is in having more pizza parties together and not working. So I'm just kind of riffing here, but any thoughts to add to that? Or is this interesting?
I like the idea. The thing is, I was wondering, can you make from a low accountables, can you make high accountables? Or is it just you need to replace them? Or is it something that you also can work on that people that are low accountable, can you also engage them more or do things or ask questions or whatever?
It's a great question. So it's not like, oh, you're a low accountable, I'm kicking you out right away. What we do is we love that. And our tools are, I invite you often to a more evolved way of moving forward that will lead to happiness. So let me give you an example. So a low accountable typically vents a lot, meaning they say, hey, do you have a minute? And they actually need 45 minutes and they just complain about a client or complain about a coworker. And we want to care. So we like listen. And we actually research this. At the end of the hey, do you have a minute meeting, it's usually 45 minutes of venting. And it's the typical topic is speculation, people not present, things that never happened, things that could never happen. And the conclusion of the leader's time, money, salary, hourly pay, and their salary, hourly pay is, please don't do anything. I just wanted you to know, so now I feel better. So when you look at that money lost, that's part of the 2.5 hours a day of drama. That's what we want to help do better with. So let me give you a tool that's also in the article. If someone said, hey, do you have a minute? We want you to be approachable. We want you to love them. We want you to be supportive. But when someone says that, we teach you to say, I do have a minute for you, but do you have an S bar? Imagine S-B-A-R. It's a tool where before they dump everything onto you, they have to reflect for it. And high accountables reflect more often. You want to move them to self-reflection instead of venting. So the S bar is simply you write on a piece of paper, has to be written out beyond ego and drama. S-B-A-R. And imagine this. What's the present situation? One sentence. Now, why is one sentence important? It's hard to get into a lot of venting or the snake when you have to get clear on what's the rope. So the tool drives that better behavior and less drama. It's accountability to the truth. So we have a client that does not have the information they need. What's the snake that most people would say? And let me tell you more, the backstory. They're just a nightmare and they ask 1,000 questions and they don't trust us. And they're just that's all the story you're creating up. We have a client without information. What's the background? Got to be relevant. A lot of people in our companies work for the History Channel, is what we call it in the US, but they want to tell you like, oh, back in 1979, when the company started, we didn't used to have to do this. It's like, what does this have to do with 2025 strategy? Make sure people aren't holding grudges. And then A is your analysis of the situation. It's got to be expertise, not opinions. What's expertise? Have you checked the data? Did you look at our system? What's best practice? What is the best consultant say on how to handle this? What's your training tell you? Not my gut feeling is, or my grandfather used to say. It's like, what is the actual like data here? Have you pulled the data? And then the last part is, what are your recommendations on what we could do? It's got to be 2 to 5. Now the ego, which keeps us from happiness, it wants to say, well, the only way to do this is my way. That's drama, because there's 100 ways to move forward on something. And to say it's only one way, that's actually your preference. And then the ego, when it's really out, says, well, you're the leader. You get paid the big bucks. You figure this out, which just reinforces that every problem, you're just going to bring it to me and you're going to be the helpless victim. So once you give 2 to 5 recommendations, I like the person to reflect on what's the cost benefit. So an example, we could get this done faster, but we're going to have to pull 3 more colleagues in. And so it's going to be a little bit of a waste of resources. We could do, you know, re-change the deadline, but the client might be upset. So I want to have like you're reflecting on the trade-offs of your opinions on what to do. So then after that person reads that S-bar, it takes usually 1 minute after they've done some reflecting. All the leader has to do is say, I like number 3. Nice job. Can I count on you to go do this? Now, can I count on you to go do this? You want to get a verbal yes. I mentioned those 4 factors of accountability. The first one is commitment. Are you all in to do this? So I just secured your commitment. And the best part about this tool is he or she who processes the work, does the tool, takes action on it. So they process the work, you just listened for drama, and then you went with their idea. So they're now excited. They're like, wow, I'm capable, and you liked my idea. I'm all about this. And you just get to be free to do your work. Most leaders, someone says, hey, do you have a minute? They dump the drama on you. You process it and say, oh, I'll take care of it. Now they just gave you their work. Or you say, do this, and you didn't go with their idea. Now they're like, I'm not bought into this because I had to do your idea, not mine. And so the S-bar, just that one tool, if you enforce it and remind people often, give me an S-bar, it will create a culture of ownership immediately by nature. So just taking that one tool, and I have a link in the article to download it and watch a video. It's like that right there, just one tool could change your culture. Now there's a funny thing about drama, and the number one source of drama is ego. I see companies I work with, they do the S-bar for a couple months. They come back to me, they're like, we have changed our culture. We are so into how we could. People are so empowered. They're so accountable. And I'm like, so when's the last S-bar you've used? Well, it went good for 2 months. And our people start to say, can I just talk to you about this? Can I just kind of vent a little bit? I just need to talk you through it. That's drama trying to get back in and morph and ruin it. It wants to just vent and get into drama. And so your job is to say, I appreciate that, but let's do an SBAR and then we'll talk. Because the ego is the number one source of drama. It's always trying to evolve and bring drama back into your company. The SBAR is one way to prevent that. So long story into what's in that article to help you go deeper. But that's like one way right now you could start today or tomorrow to create a culture of ownership.
Nice. Thank you so much, Alex. It's really a great tip and a great tool to use. And you can read more in this issue of emergence. One last question, and then we have to wrap up. We can wrap up with this last question. Why did you work on us with for emergence on this issue of reform and culture?
When the topic came through, it was like you just sparked something that I've been sitting on for a while and kind of frustrated about. Is the word ownership is what accountability has been dumbed down to, where like one of the big books in the US is like extreme ownership, where it's like, and that's anything extreme is not healthy, because that the four factors of accountability are like a balanced, peaceful process that just shows you where you can improve. And so when you said how to create a culture of ownership, I'm like, that gets too rigid and control freaks love that. And it just creates a worse workplace. It's not happiness. Ownership's one of four reasons, factors of accountability. But if you over-rotate, it gets unhealthy. So it really sparks something I've been thinking about a lot. And it's not peaceful to do a all in on ownership. It is just, it's micromanaging. So I thought with that, it's like sparked me. I have to write this. And if anyone reads it, even one person, and gets some value out of it, I'm like, I'll do it. And so that's why I wrote it. And the other reason is because that your level of accountability is determining your level of happiness and results, period. So I think it's that important to put the message out there. And I feel like there's no better audience for focusing on a week of happiness globally to do that. And the last thing I'll say is some new engagement research came out, which is like how engaged is the workforce, which means how, in some sense, happy are you at work, which most of us are there for 8 to 10 hours a day. In the US, for 20 years, it's been 70% of the American workforce is disengaged at work. My translation to that is 70% of the American population is coming to work and collecting a paycheck, even though they're completely checked out. In that mindset and approach, there's no chance you're ever going to be happy. And depression is off the roof in the US and I think globally. One reason I think is people are choosing to show up to work disengaged. How do you immediately re-engage? You use some of our tools for accountability. You have no chance to disengage if you use these tools. So then I found something from ADP globally, and this is a global audience. It was 82% across the world they found. I thought, oh, of course, this is just Americans entitled and coming to work and getting money and not trying. Oh, globally, it was 82%. And you can find that article. So I just find that this is really important to get the message on how to do, as a leader, facilitate reflection towards accountability, because it leads to people realizing where happiness is. It's right in front of them. And you can only work with the willing, but if they do the SBAR, there's no chance they can't engage, even in a messy situation. So it's kind of like I wanted to create an article that shows you that it's checkmate. If you want happiness, it's right here with these tools. If you don't, that's okay. I can only work with the willing, but now you know better. So I don't know if that sums it up, but that's kind of what I was thinking. So, I hope some people dive in and reach out to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I read your article, and I think that this message came across, and I hopefully that you agree with me about it. So, Alex, thank you very much. I say goodbye to you and also to the audience. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you very much for being here and telling your story. And I'll see you audience in the next video.
Thank you so much, everyone. Let's keep ditching the drama. Love people up, call them up to greatness. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.